welcome to this first lecture. So one of the things we want to explore as we kind of make our way through the history of Christian theology is the question, why do we believe what we believe? Some of you who are watching this video may be a Christian, you may be a Protestant, you may be Catholic, maybe you're Orthodox, maybe you're agnostic, you're not sure if you believe in a God or if there is a God, maybe some of you don't believe anything at all or would say that you're an atheist. As we move through these videos and we focus on the nature of Christian belief and the history of Christian belief, what I really want to focus on is why we believe these things. What are the conditions of our belief? And as we move through the different kind of historical epochs of Christianity, what we find is there are these different, I call them philosophical tools that people use to make sense of Christianity. We'll spend some time with Augustine, for example, who used the philosophical tools of Neoplatonism. We'll spend some time on Thomas Aquinas, who uses Aristotle. And then as we get into modern and contemporary theology, we'll explore some of the philosophical tools that they use or perspectives that they use. Now, I'm not trying to reduce Christianity to philosophy or to kind of cultural or social ways of thinking, but it is important for us to think about how we interpret the biblical revelation of who God is in Jesus Christ. So for those of us who are Christians, you know, we take Scripture as the revelation of God. But then we're trying to make sense of what Scripture means. And so this is where doctrine and theological categories come from. We're always trying to kind of interpret and make sense and use language to talk about why we believe these things or how we believe these things. So I want to start by talking a little bit about Star Wars. For those of you who know Star Wars, specifically Episode 4, there's this scene where they're flying in the Millennium Falcon and Luke has a blaster shield on and Obi-Wan Kenobi is trying to help show him the ways of the Force. And Han Solo comes and he sits down and they begin to have this little conversation about the Force. And so one of the questions that I want to put before you is whether or not you find yourself more like a Han Solo type character or an Obi-Wan Kenobi type of character. And so I have two quotes for you. The first one comes from Obi-Wan Kenobi or Ben Kenobi as he's talking to Luke about what the Force is. He says, "The Force is what gives a Jedi his power. It's an energy field created by all living things. It surrounds us and penetrates us. It binds the galaxy together." In other words, what Ben Kenobi is saying to Luke is that there is more to the galaxy or the cosmos than just physical stuff. There are forces at work in the world, and these forces interact with and engage us. And this is what Ben Kenobi is inviting Luke into. And he wants Luke to see the world or the cosmos or the galaxy from that perspective. In response, Han Solo says, "Hokey religions and ancient weapons are no match for a good blaster at your side, kid." In other words, Han Solo is a skeptic. But more than that, Han Solo uses technology. He wants a blaster. He sees the world as nothing more than material things and believes that the only force at work in the world is power. Now, by the end of all the Star Wars stuff before Han Solo dies, you get this confession that, you know, it's true, every bit of it. So he has this kind of conversion experience. But here in Episode 4, they represent two different ways of thinking about or looking at the world. And what I want to suggest to you is that Han Solo and Ben Kenobi can provide a way for us to think about the philosophical tools we use to make sense of Christian belief. So when we go back into the world of Augustine and Thomas Aquinas, for example, there certainly was this sense that there was a spiritual dimension to the world, and there was a participation of the material into the spiritual. And we'll get into that when we talk a little bit about the Platonic forms and how all of that kind of laid over Christianity, or Augustine lays Christianity and Scripture over that Neoplatonic perspective. But then by the time we get to the Reformation and past into modernity and the Enlightenment, what we end up with is a world in which it's been cut off from that spiritual dimension. So what we have are material conditions, and so we should pay attention more to the material conditions. So for those of us who live in the West, we've been more influenced by that latter one, this sense of cutting off the world from any participation in a higher spiritual reality, even for Christians, as we'll talk about. But one of the things that I want to talk about in this context is the question of people leaving Christianity, or leaving the church, or leaving faith. So Pew Research has done all of this stuff and shown that increasingly people check the none of the above box when they're asked about their religious beliefs. And the question is, why is this happening? Why is there a decrease in the number of people who are connected to institutional forms of Christianity or religion or faith, and more people are kind of moving away from it? One of the philosophers that I've found really helpful to kind of think through some of these things is Charles Taylor. He wrote this big book called A Secular Age, about 700 pages, in which he's exploring this very question. How do we go from the world of Martin Luther, where you could not believe in God? In other words, the society and the cultural frame was set up in such a way that you did believe in God. The church was the center of the world, to a world today in the West. It's different from other cultures, but in the West, certainly, atheism is much more plausible, and people are leaving kind of institutionalized forms of religion. And one of the things that he talks about is the move from a reality that was porous. And so if you think about the relationship between the spiritual and the material world, think about the line between those two aspects of existence having holes, or being like a strainer, so that you could move back and forth. There was a sense in which there was a spiritual world, a transcendence, if you will, that participated in or was bound up with the material world. And so to talk about magic and miracles and demons and angels and all of this type of stuff made perfect sense. And so in some way, the gospel and the world of Christianity is closer to that world as we read the biblical text and we hear some of those things that are going on. But then at the Reformation, what happens is we get this turn and we begin to move into a world that is increasingly cut off. And he refers to this as kind of the imminent frame, that the holes, or the sieve, or the porousness gets solidified. He calls this the buffered self, that we now are focused on this world and not this transcendent spirituality, but now kind of focused on this world. And so as you think about the shift from religion being the thing that is most important to things like politics and economics and science and technology, really one way to think about this is a shift in faith, that while in the ancient medieval world there was a sense of faith in a transcendent God, now we've moved and we've slid faith into these new kind of modes of existence, politics, economics, and so on, that are part of this kind of imminent frame. And so one of the things that I want to do is I want to use Charles Taylor as a way to explore this question, why do we believe what we believe, as we think through how Christians have believed and thought about God and Jesus Christ and the doctrine of the Trinity and the sacraments, and what does it mean to believe in God? And what did it mean for Augustine to believe in God? And what does Neoplatonism have to do with it? And now, what does it mean for us to believe in God? Those of us maybe who are Protestants, evangelicals, or fundamentalists, or Reformed, or Episcopalian, what does it mean for us to believe in God as we are now on this side of this kind of move to the imminent frame. And of course, we'll talk about the Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church and how the sense of the bread and the wine becoming the body and blood make much more sense in this porous world that is part of the ancient and medieval worlds. So this is one of the things that I really want to focus on, is how do we understand and articulate who God is, and how do we make sense of the language and the categories that we use then to express our faith and to believe in God? Now, to do this, what we're going to do is we're going to take this historical journey exploring what other Christians have said about who God is. And that's really how, if somebody were asked me, what is theology? I really don't think we're studying God as if God is some specimen or, that we can take God into a laboratory and dissect God. And I understand that the word itself it pushes in that direction, kind of the study of God. But as we go, I think we'll find, as we especially move into medieval and modern and contemporary theology, we'll find this sense of the apophatic. In other words, when does our language strain? We can use language to talk about God. At the same time, we've got to be careful that we don't reduce God to the language that we have or the philosophical categories that we have. So we want to talk about the philosophical tools we use, but do it in a way where it's accenting the language of faith and how different traditions, different groups of people at different times have talked about who God is and give an expression to that. So what I want to emphasize is this sense that studying theology and the importance of studying theology is to develop and cultivate a language for talking about God, for talking about faith, and to talk about human experience. You know, John Calvin claims that our knowledge of God and knowledge of our own human self are bound up with one another. We'll see that with Augustine. We'll see that with others as well. But doing theology is to talk about God and the revelation of God, but then it gets at, you know, what does it mean to be a human creature? And what does it mean to live in this world? What is a life and why do we live it? But we also want to engage other people's experiences of God. And so one of the reasons to do this historically is to spend some time trying to better understand what did some of the ancient Christians believe about who God is and what it means to live as a Christian. What does it mean to be Roman Catholic? Some of you watching this video may be Catholic. And for some Protestants, you may be wondering, well, what is Catholicism all about? And vice versa. What does it mean to be Protestant? What does it mean to be Reformed? What does it mean to be Anabaptist? And so trying to wrestle through these different experiences of God. And I think one of the reasons why we read theologians isn't necessarily because they're better or more spiritual than us, but they also have had experiences of God. And I think it's important that we recognize the Christian community in its breadth, and we take the time to think about other people's experiences and how can they help give me language to be able to talk about my own experience of God. But then beyond that, it's about how do we engage this world? What is the meaning of existence? What is reality? How should we speak about God's relationship to the created world? And then how does it speak to our own relationship with the created world? So these are all things that I want us to kind of keep in the background as we begin this study, as we begin exploring some of the ways that Christians have thought about who God is. And we'll begin with the ancient Christians. We'll begin with that period right after the early church. As they begin to formulate some of their beliefs, they bump up against people who believe different things. Then they begin to formulate creeds, statements of this is what we believe. And we'll talk a little bit about the Apostles' Creed and the Nicene Creed and what those things are saying about God in relationship to the world, but also the person of Jesus Christ.